first in the case of Stranitsky against Pruco Life Insurance. Mr. Reed.
Good morning, Judge. May I please the court, David Reed, for the appellant, together with Roger Rutherford, counsel. By way of background, Percy Rossetti, the deceased, was over 80 years old. He had no children. He was uneducated. He did not have a telephone. He had a mailbox, but communication by correspondence with Mr. Rossetti was uncertain. Percy Rossetti accumulated considerable wealth through a frugal lifestyle.
It sounds like a frugal lifestyle,
yes,
the way
sir.
You described it.
There was an estate planning process that went on here. Percy Rossetti met with his insurance agents who recommended that he see an attorney to draft a trust and estate plan. Rossetti then met with that attorney, and at a discussion, there was concern that Percy Rossetti would owe estate taxes. He was also concerned that the trustee, executor, may not have enough money to pay those estate taxes. Finally, he wanted to help out the kids at St. Aloysius Elementary School. In fact, he decided to gift $375,000 to the school, and he requested that the school recognize this gift through a plaque mounted at an appropriate place in the school. Percy subsequently established a trust and a pour-over will. The trust's purpose was to pay taxes, make distributions, to the school and certain beneficiaries. Percy Rossetti then instructed his counsel to take the necessary steps to fund the trust and to transfer the annuity policies. Rossetti's counsel took certain efforts to fund the trust. Rossetti's counsel made a good faith effort to accomplish these objectives. Forms were sought from insurance companies, and these forms were submitted to Percy Rossetti for signature. Percy Rossetti's counsel was trying to get this right. If the court would refer to a letter to William Warren, who was a representative for one of the insurance companies, dated October 14, 1999. That letter specifically references that the purpose of this is to transfer ownership and the proceeds to the trust. That same communication was made with agents for Pruco or Prudential and PFL. That communication was made.
Who are the adverse claimants to the funds under the PFL policies?
They are certain relatives of the decedent, Judge.
And where are they?
Well,
the only people defending the judgment in this case seem to be claiming under the Pruco policies. Did they file adverse claims in the district court?
They did. They're represented, Judge. Prudential, and counsel can correct this if I'm wrong, but Prudential is representing PFL also in the litigation of this case.
Prudential isn't representing anybody except itself. This is an interpleader. The only people representing claimants to the funds are the claimants to the funds. That's the nature of an interpleader. So what has gone on with the adverse claimants to the PFL policies? Say they made a formal claim in the district court. I suppose you're not the right person to answer the question why they are not here. But one wonders what we're supposed to do when there appears to be nobody defending the judgment with respect to the PFL policies.
I can't answer that, Judge.
And it's not your position that we should therefore summarily reverse with respect to them because you haven't asked for that relief?
Yes, I would, Judge. I would ask.
No, you have not asked for that relief. You had an opportunity in your brief, maybe you couldn't have predicted that they wouldn't appear, and then in a reply brief. One doesn't spring that on one's adversaries at oral arguments.
Unless you're the judge, but go ahead.
Pardon me, Judge?
I said unless you're the judge, then you can spring
it
on your adversary.
Right,
you've just been sprung on, so go ahead.
Counsel would refer the court, also to the PFL or Pacific Life form, being an annuity policy change form and trustee certification. We would also refer to the PRUCO or Prudential forms. A close look at those forms will show no reference to any other necessary forms, being a change of beneficiary form. We believe that Percy Rossetti had the paramount right to dispose of his belongings as he saw fit, citing Wood v. Wood, 284 Relap 3rd, 118, 1996. We believe that under the Dooley case, the intent was shown and there was substantial compliance.
Dooley explicitly holds that intent is insufficient.
Correct, Judge.
The person has to take all the steps that are available to him.
Well,
how did Rossetti take all available steps?
He saw his insurance agent, he saw his attorney, he signed a revocable trust, he signed a pour over will, he asked his attorney to transfer the policies to the trust.
Well,
the ownership
his attorney may have committed malpractice. Is there a pending malpractice suit against the attorney?
Not to my knowledge, Judge.
But I don't understand how one could say with respect to the PRUCO policies, where there was never any effort to sign a change of beneficiary form, and where Rossetti didn't even effectively transfer ownership of the policies because PRUCO demanded a particular form and Rossetti just ignored it.
Well, Judge, we're not sure that we would admit that PRUCO and PFL mailed certain letters to Mr. Rossetti, but we have there's no proof in the record that he received those letters or read them or understood them. If the court would look at those letters, they're benign form letters.
The Supreme Court of Illinois' test appears to be objective, not subjective. It's not a question whether somebody read the things sent to him. It's a question whether he did all the things that were doable.
It's our position that when he saw an attorney and asked that attorney to prepare these returns to fund his estate plan, when he signed the forms that were presented to him for signatures, he did everything that was possible for him to do, everything reasonable.
What about the change of beneficiary forms for PFL? You're right, he signed it, but there was no date on it. Doesn't that suggest the possibility that maybe he changed his mind or maybe he wanted to send them in at a later date? Or
We don't think so, Judge. We think that was all part of the same process. That was, he saw the insurance agents, he signed one set of forms, he saw an attorney, he signed another set of forms. We believe that both those acts, it's like the step transaction in tax law, both those acts near the same time go to show his intent and evidence, an affirmative act of his intent.
Well, and don't you have this other problem? Here we have Rossetti. He retained the change of beneficiary forms. He had those within his control, and that's certainly distinguishable from those cases where there's been a finding of substantial compliance despite the failure to satisfy technical requirements. But in those cases, the paperwork was out of the hands of the individual. So isn't that a problem for you too?
That is a problem, Judge. We would say in response to that Mr. Rossetti didn't know that he had to submit those other change of beneficiary forms. We also, in our affidavit, said that those forms, those signed forms, were part of files found after his death, and I'm not sure if they were in his possession or in the executor's possession, successor trustee's possession. But that is an issue. We would say that nonetheless goes to show that he wanted that done. He wanted the trust to be the beneficiary of those funds. I'm going to sit down and rejoin the court on rebuttal, if I might.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All right.
Unless there's any other questions.
Thank you. Mr. Rutherford.
Please support, counsel. My name is Roger Rutherford, and I'm here to present the fourth issue raised upon review, that the district court awarded the attorney's fees in error. It is well settled, Your Honor, that a district court has discretion in determining an award of attorney's fees and costs, and that the appellate review of an award of attorney's fees and costs must focus on whether there has been an abuse of that discretionary authority. Furthermore, we agree with the appellee that the general rule in many jurisdictions is that a disinterested stakeholder in a federal interpleader action who deposits funds into the court is generally entitled to an award of attorney's fees. However, we respectfully disagree with our opponent in its application of attorney's fees in the factual situation before the court in the case of Barr. The appellees in the cite the case of Prudential Insurance Company of America versus Louise Stubbs in a May 10, 2002 opinion of the United States District Court of the Central District of Illinois. We believe that case is distinguishable from the case of Barr in that the Stubbs case, in that case, the defendant Louise Stubbs did not object to an award of attorney's fees, but instead consented to the fees. Also, unlike the case before us today, the appellant asserts that in that case there was no issue of fault. In this case, we assert that the insurer is at fault. And again, this is different factually from the case before us. Other jurisdictions, we realize, recognize that under an insurance company situation where an insurance company brings an interpleader action, should not generally be awarded counsel fees. In this line of cases, we ask that the court consider applying the facts of this case. A theory here is that the insurance company is the chief beneficiary in an interpleader action, and that awarding such fees might improperly allow the insurance company to recover a part of their ordinary costs of doing business, that being the key phrase, from the funds on deposit with the court's registry. In the case at Barr, the insurance company had the use of the funds in excess of 2 years. It is undeniable that Pruco benefited from the two-year delay and ensuing litigation by having the use of those funds for over that 24 months.
Was prejudgment interest not awarded on the funds?
Yes, I believe there was, Your
well,
Honor.
That extracts the benefit of the use of the funds for 2 years.
Also, the litigation was pending, and the beneficiaries were delayed the opportunity to have the distribution of funds as well, Your Honor. The appellees request an additional award also in their cross appeal for fees, and we also ask that that be denied, that there's no basis provided that the court's award in the trial court was not sufficient to satisfy the attorney's fees required. We also argue, the appellee would argue, Your Honor, that the determination of a beneficiary is not a normal part of an insurer's business. But we respectfully disagree. We submit that the development of the preparation of clear and concise forms, as Mr. Reed alluded to, is part of an insurance company's duty and responsibility in preparing products that are understandable and readily usable by an individual such as Mr. Rossetti. And that's in the normal course of action and normal course of business of an insurance company. In this case, PFL's and Pruco's forms were contradictory and confusing. As Mr. Reed has alluded to, and Prudential's forms were at best misleading. A review of the ownership change that Mr. Reed referred the court to, which is attached as Exhibit F on our petition for declaratory judgment, it's an appendix to the brief of the appellant. A review of that ownership change for the annuity contracts form does not inform the insured party of the need for any additional form to change the beneficiaries. Therefore, we suggest it is misleading and confusing. In addition, Your Honor, we have raised the action of Pruco's agents regarding their failure to advise Mr. Rossetti of the need for additional forms. We suggest that nothing was done in that regard, and we have also provided an affidavit that supports that, Your Honor. For these reasons, we respectfully request that the court find that the district court erred in the award of attorney's fees, and alternatively, in response to Pruco's cross appeal, for an additional award of fees and costs be denied. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Rutherford. Ms. Licari.
Good morning, Justices, Counsel. May it please the Court, Mary Licari for Appley Cross Appellant, Pruco Life Insurance Company. I believe that Plaintiff's Counsel was correct when he indicated that generally attorney fees can be awarded in interpleader actions Attorney fees are awarded because a stakeholder is the target of a dispute which is not of its own making, and because it provides a service by bringing in all the potentially interested parties and having the dispute resolved in a single forum to avoid piecemeal litigation. And it also safeguards the funds from potentially adverse and conflicting claims. In fact, those were the very reasons that the district court awarded attorney fees in the first instance. Now, with respect to the allegations regarding the Pruco forms, the district court expressly found in her opinion that there was no evidence in the record whatsoever that Pruco in any way contributed to the dispute among the beneficiaries. The court concluded that there was no evidence that Mr. Rossetti's attorney was deliberately misadvised as to which forms to use. There was no evidence that Pruco failed to follow up with Mr. Rossetti. And I also wish to point out to the court that when Pruco moved for interpleader, it was granted, and there's no appeal taken from that. And there was never any cause of action against
Pruco. It's not an appealable order.
Pardon, Your Honor?
It's not an appealable order.
But the court awarded interpleader because there was no finding of any fault and no interest whatsoever in the stakeholder. There's never been any cause of action in this action against Pruco relating to any acts or omissions of its agents. Now, in the cases where attorney fees have been denied, it generally is in cases where the insurance company has some interest in the outcome. They may be denying part of the payment. It also happens in cases where there might be only one or two claimants, service was very easy, or in cases where the court concludes that interpleader probably wasn't necessary. The dispute could have been resolved by the insurance companies very easily. In this particular case, Pruco had to remove the case to federal court, and that was opposed by the plaintiffs, and they had to serve 21 parties, some of whom were out overseas in military service, and there was a minor involved for which a guardian ad litem had to be appointed. For those very reasons, the district court concluded that attorney fees were appropriate. At the very least, Judge, we ask that the district court's order granting Pruco attorney fees be granted. We believe, however, that under the circumstances, Pruco should be awarded dollar for dollar all of the costs that it expended relating to the removal to federal court, service on all the potential beneficiaries, and the filing of the interpleader action. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Licari. Mr. O'Keefe.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Dwight O'Keefe, and I represent certain of the appellees, beneficiaries of two Pruco policies. We believe Judge Scott...
Do you know what has happened to the beneficiaries of the other seven policies?
The other five.
You represent two. Five are missing.
We have been doing the heavy lifting throughout, and I simply don't... I know there was a request by one of the attorneys that he not be present here because of the expense, but I'm not sure which one or anything else, and we've tried to address ourselves to the issues of these two policies.
Your Honor. I understand. Did the claimants under the other five policies at least file claims in the district court?
I believe they did.
Okay. Thank you.
As I said, we believe Judge Scott stated the facts correctly, applied the law correctly, and her decision should be affirmed. The decedent, not unlike the decedent in Dooley, had changed beneficiaries previously. He was familiar with the forms, and my clients were not the original beneficiaries of these two policies. Mr. Rossetti had professional assistance in this matter. However, not only did he not complete the change of ownership to his trust, he ignored Pruco's letter informing what to do to effectuate the change. He really did nothing with respect to the change of beneficiary. What he failed to do in his submission was fail to correctly change ownership. He did even less than Justice Dooley. He did not take the concrete step, did not do all he reasonably could do to effectuate the change in ownership and the change in beneficiary.
Well, why would Rossetti execute a trust and will if he didn't intend that the proceeds from the annuity contract, which were his most valuable assets, be directed into the trust?
I can't look into Mr. Rossetti's mind, Your Honor. I am familiar with trust and estate practice, and I know that one of the failures of living trusts is the failure of the settlor to fund. There's a psyche that once you do that, you're done, and the funding is somewhat suspect. I have no idea. He may have changed his mind. He may have decided that, changed his mind as to where the fund should go. He may have changed his mind as to the trust. That's speculation. What we do know from the record is, just like Justice Dooley. Justice Dooley said, type it up, I'll sign it, and give it to me, and I'll sign it, and he died. We don't know what happened here, but it's just as easy to speculate that he did want my clients to take these funds than he wanted others to take. The Illinois Supreme Court in Dooley said there must be a combination of intent to make the change and positive action to effectuate that end. Judge Scott found that to change the beneficiary on Pruco's annuity contracts, the decedent was required to complete the change form. He did not. Judge Scott found Mr. Rossetti did not do all that was reasonably within his power to carry out an intention to change the beneficiaries. We would ask the court to affirm the Judge Scott's decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. O'Keefe. Anything further, Mr. Reed?
Very briefly, we would state that in the amended affidavit of counsel for Rossetti, that there was a charge that Pruco or Prudential and PFL did mislead the decedent and the decedent's counsel. Also, we would state with respect to the Dooley case again, that there are several differences. Justice Dooley was a justice of the Illinois Supreme Court. Percy Rossetti was an uneducated man, 85 years old. Justice Dooley knew he had to do something else, whereas Rossetti believed he had done everything. We also know from the Dooley case that Justice Dooley's notes were not his final decision, where we have affidavits from Rossetti's counsel and from the executor that he did intend to do this. For these reasons, and finally, if I might, this case was different from when he changed beneficiary forms before for the reason that he set up a trust this time. He had never done that before.
Thank you, Mr. Reed.
Thank you, Judge.
The case will be taken under advisement.